Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, where each week we belly up to the bar with a new guest, find out what they do, who they are, and what makes them great. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Alrighty, folks, welcome back to the Above the Bar podcast. I'm going to let you know right now, our current guest, and normally I find out what state they're in so I know what state of confusion they're living in. I didn't get it, but I love the fact that, you know, someday StreamYard will give me the ability to record before and after the show some of the backstage stuff, which I've already told them they need to do. But nothing is better as how excited our current guest got. First, she was excited because she's our second Taryn, T-A-R-Y-N. The first was Taryn Hatfield, the singer. And now we have Taryn Davis, who's going to teach us how to, you know, put our businesses together. But nothing was more exciting than when I told her, I'm going to drink bourbon during the show. And she was like, I can have a gin and tonic. I was like, this is the best. So she ran off and got a gin and tonic beforehand and literally walked right in as the music was stopping. And we're going to ask her about music because I've done a lot of shows. This is like 2:35 and I've never seen a harp behind somebody. So we're going to have a conversation about that harp here in a minute. So welcome to the Above the Bar podcast, Miss Taryn.
Thank you.
So you get applause and everything.
Yes.
So, like, is that a legit harp?
Yeah, it is.
You play, like, there's music. I can see a sheet of music right there.
Yeah.
This is a Celtic lever harp. And it's got, I think, 34 strings. I also have a pedal harp, which is a closer to what you typically see in an orchestra. I've been playing for about 15 years.
That's a whole conversation.
I will go as far as you like. I don't want to
listen, I'm going to ask you about that. I'm very curious already, and I know we're going to be talking business strategies and culture and values and all those things, but let's go ahead and get some house cleaning done before we get into talking with Taryn. As always, folks, over my right shoulder, we got the big board for Sticker and a Cause. If you got something you're supporting, maybe you have a harp band. You play a rock and roll harp, which I did go to the Saratoga Jazz Festival and did see a jazz harp. So maybe you have something like that going on. You've got something you're looking to support. Reach out to us on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, X, Instagram, our .com, theabovethebarpodcast.com, and our email, theabovethebarpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you got going on. I'll tell you where to send your sticker to. We put the sticker on the big board. Read all about you live. I love you. Listen, folks, I'm going to post it again because it just popped up again. If you did not know it, you can go into an iPhone and there's gestures and you can make things happen. My personal favorite is right here. If you're not watching the live, which would be the laser beams jumping all over the place, but that's completely different. But we also got to talk about our sponsors, folks. That's who's paying the bills around here. And that's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush and Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. They are Budget Blinds is the number one and largest window treatment company in North America. They have places in Canada, obviously in the U.S. They are your custom window treatment company. What do I mean by custom? I mean the fact that, like, I know right now Taryn probably has a window to her right-hand side with the sun coming right through it. With a good window treatment, you can learn how to have light control, insulation, privacy. There's multiple styles and sustainability. They even carry products that are either naturally made, and everything they have just about has at least a 5-year, no questions asked warranty, meaning when Fido goes and jumps up on there, your cat thinks they're Evel Knievel and tears your window your custom window treatments up. You pick up the phone, you call them up and you say, hey, I need a new one. And they're just going to come out and put a new one in. That's Budget Blinds of East Greenbush, Budget Blinds of Hudson and Coxsackie, New York. Let them know you're there to belly up to the bar and they're going to give you a 15% discount off your entire order. All right, Ms. Taryn, all the house cleaning is done.
Okay, well then let's cheers because it feels inappropriate to not cheers. So cheers, Sean.
Salut.
Sante.
Oh, good. Oh, you went with the Irish Sante. I love it.
French, actually.
Hold on. I always thought that was an Irish.
Well, I know Sante from French.
Or maybe I'm thinking of, what's the Irish one? Shalom. Not Shalom. That would be Jewish. Shalom. That would not be.
I'm unprepared for this question. I'm sorry. I did not prepare my various linguistic cheers.
So now what state are you, what state do you live in?
I'm in Idaho right now.
Oh, listen, you're going to call me a crazy person again.
Again.
Our first Taryn, I'm almost absolutely positive she's from Idaho also.
Interesting.
Is that like an Idaho name?
No, I'm actually from Colorado. And I'm kind of in Idaho and Colorado at the moment. But in this particular moment, I'm in Boise.
I got to ask this question. Oh, Aaron's watching. World champion beer grower Aaron Johnson. Love that dude. But I got to ask this question. Is Idaho going through like a big growth spurt? Like things are going on out there? That most of the East and the West Coast don't really understand or know?
I don't know if they understand or know it. It has grown a lot. What I want to do is say, everyone stay away. Don't come here.
Yeah, don't go there. It's horrible. It's cold. It's a lot of potatoes. A lot of potatoes. Oh,
boring. Who likes potatoes anyway? Starchy.
Very. Not good for not good, not good for your trendy diets. Not good for trendy diets. A lot of potatoes. But I feel like I get a lot of, I've had a lot of guests. Like Montana was a big one for a little bit there, and then Idaho. Like, so I'm wondering, is there like this trend of like the what I would typically call the land that God forgot, like out there that like nobody was really living in? There's like population density isn't huge. But now it seems like everybody's heading out that way.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Now, I got to ask you this before we get into what we plan on talking about. And look, folks, as we're going through this all with Taryn, and you want to know what she's got going on, she does have a website. It's TBD-TangoBravoDelta-Strategies.com. That's TBD-Strategies.com. I got to ask real quick, though, what is what gin are we using? What type of gin?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. This is Empress 1908. It's super fun because it's actually purple. And so when you buy it in the bottle, it looks sort of blue. And then when you add the tonic, it changes color. So it's like it's just a fun statement piece, really.
I'm
the best thing to use on a podcast for sure.
That is pretty good. So we'll have to see about getting you a bottle of this one. Then this was one of our former, do you know the show Downton Abbey?
Yes. Yes.
Did you watch Downton Abbey? I did. Do you notice the castle on it?
Mm-hmm. That is the castle.
And so this is their gin.
Wow.
So it's called High Clear Castle Gin. And it's actually really interesting. So when they made this, the gentleman who was involved in it, Adam, was telling me it's a gin that they used oat. They used an oat in it that's not typically associated with a gin, so that it lingered on your palate a little bit longer.
Oh, I'm so interested.
So it's a gin you can sip. You don't have to mix it with anything.
I'm so interested. That's fascinating.
You should check. And he was also the person who educated me on where the term gin and tonic, how that was created. It actually had, okay. Welcome to me telling you about how I know about things to get drunk with, folks, on this episode. But no, he was explaining it to me that it had to do with when the English were traveling by sea, mm-hmm. and they needed to give medications to the troops. They, like, one of the things that they had to give them for scurvy or something like that was absolutely gross, and they had problems giving it to them. So they would mix it with tonic water and gin. They needed the lemon, and they would mix it and give it to them, and it eventually just became a drink. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably giving a horrible adaptation of what the history here is. But yeah, that's basically how that happened.
Well, Sean, you know, that sounds about right. My dad is British, and that's what he's always told me, is that you drink gin and tonics to keep away scurvy. So.
Well, then your dad also knows my favorite summertime cocktail. By far, one of these things that as Americans, we don't know enough about. Mm-hmm. But if we would spend the time to have this drink, it is by far the best warm summertime sitting by the pool on a hot day drink. Pimm's one cup.
Oh, yes. 100%. Also, if you're having a croquet party, Pimm's, do it.
Have you had a croquet party? I've never had a croquet party.
I have. It's just, I'm not really good at croquet, but it just feels culturally appropriate, you know, being half British, and the Pimm's just really makes the experience. It's really just an excuse to drink Pimm's. You know, you don't have to be good at croquet to do it.
Pimm's, folks, for those that's never had it, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of like I don't want to call it a prune kind of flavor, but it's different.
It's just interesting, and it's really fun because you can put fruit and things in it. It's sort of a summertime afternoon version of a Bloody Mary, I would say.
I'll give you that, but actually good, and I think.
Yeah, actually good. Mm-hmm.
I think Bloody Marys are absolutely gross. So, well, as I've already hijacked my own show there, Miss Taryn, and we're off running, talking about drinking and everything. I want everybody to know a little bit about you. So you're okay. Born in Colorado, moved out to Idaho, but you specialize in working with businesses. And as we talked about, you know, scalable, sustainable, and stable businesses for, I'm going to say entrepreneurs, but do you also work with I actually love this term, intrapreneurs or just entrepreneurs?
Great question. Yes, I work with entrepreneurs, and founders and owners. So, and I do make a distinction between all of those terms because, specifically the person that I'm looking to work with is someone who has a business and they want to not drive it into the ground and they want to do right by the business, so to speak. And sometimes you can have entrepreneurs who are in it really just to turn a dime. They're not really concerned about the business and they're not concerned about the people working in the business. They're concerned about the eventual sale of it. And that's a very different mentality from the people that I work with.
It's funny you mentioned that, just concerned with the sale of it. I'm almost finished. It's an older book, but Made in America, Sam Walton story. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that he talks about was the long game and never had an intention of ever selling the business. When people come to you that, and I want to stay with that for a second. If somebody comes to you and they're like, hey, look, we're trying to get this thing to scale it over the next 5 years, because our goal is to get a PE to come in. And for, if you don't know what a PE is, folks, it's private equity to come in and buy us out. Do you kind of go, hey, I appreciate you, high five, I'm not your person, or do you still work with them?
I ask why they want that. And if they're like, well, because we want to make millions of dollars and this is the best way to do it, then I say, okay, you are not in reality about business, period. You don't know what you're talking about. So you need to do some research. And it's not that, like, I don't know that PE or VC, venture capitalism, are necessarily like evil. I think that they can be a good fit for some businesses, depending on what the goal of the business is. But engaging in those just for the sake of making your millions is, in my opinion, it's not a kind practice, and it does not allow for sustainability in that time when you're growing the business.
And you just brought up something though that I love to talk to folks about, which is, why do you think so many people, like from a culture standpoint, especially because you're dealing with entrepreneurs every day, which I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own company. I'm going to be very clear with everyone. I do subscribe to, and I read a lot of books. I love the Zig Ziglar comment. He's an older sales, and you know, he always said, help enough people get what they want and you'll get what you want. That was always the mindset, but the idea is to make money. Why do you think we have villainized that entrepreneur, that ability to make money, and that capitalism? Like, how do you work, or do you even work with owners that are dealing with that?
that are dealing with the villainization of making
right money. The villainization of like, hey, I'm really successful and somehow I'm a bad person for being successful.
Yeah. I would love to speak to that. And I think it's actually social political. I think I'm not going to go super deep into this just out of respect for time, but our country, it has its problems. Fine. From the get-go, when the pilgrims came over on the Mayflower, right, they had this sense
four
of
score and 7 years ago,
like self-starterness. They wanted to go do something different. They wanted to have an opportunity that was not available to them. That mindset, having an opportunity that's not available to you, that's what entrepreneurship is. It takes so much hard work. It takes so much intentionality, thought, care. It's just, it's gut-wrenching in so many ways. It's also deeply satisfying. But so then if you kind of watch over the course of history as things developed in this country, they've sort of moved, I think, and this is my opinion, in a socialist direction in the last 100 years or so. And I think that is really what has given it a bad name. Because people, and this is my parents are entrepreneurs as well. They've had people come through their company who have really resented that they were successful with what they did. That's and crazy. There's nothing wrong with being employed by someone. There's nothing wrong with employing. Both of those are needed skills. We don't look at people who are employed and resent them because they have the sense of security of, you know, a W-2 position, right? So why would we resent people who are doing it a different way and creating that work? And I think it's sociopolitical. That's an opinion, and I can wax poetic on that more, but I'll leave it at that.
No, it's a great point as you're working with entrepreneurs that are trying to really push their business. Mm-hmm. I'm always curious how many of them are like, hey, I'm really looking forward to getting out there and making this successful, and then realize that, like, man, I'm successful. Now people are holding that against me. And folks, if you're watching us right now, please like, share this. I know that sounds cliche, but it really does make a difference so that everybody knows what's going on here. And if you want to see what Taryn has going on, it's tbd-strategies.com. But I mean, it's great that you're seeing that, because I mean, I've never understood people that are like, how dare that billionaire make money? Do you know how many people that billionaire employs? Mm-hmm. Do you know how many life insurance and health insurance and mm-hmm. policies that they pay for and what they pay out of their pocket? Come on, folks.
Right. But then we have this situation happening where if you've never been self-employed or employed other people, you don't understand that the more you make, the more the government takes. Like, the government takes upwards of 50% in certain cases, right? Like, depending on how much your business is making, it is hard to be successful as an entrepreneur. It's hard to be successful owning a business. It's not like there's all of these special givens for you because you're going out and doing it that way. And then when you start employing people, then you have all of these regulations to deal with. Like, it's a mess, you know? So I don't even think it's unkindness necessarily that people are having in that space. I think it's just maybe they just don't understand like what all goes into it, you know? And then they think that, well, you just happened to, I don't know, you were just lucky, and luck has something to do with it, but it also doesn't. It's like sweat and blood and tears.
A lot of sweat equity in there. it's funny, you people not understanding. And then we'll get off this topic here in a second. But I've had this conversation. I used to do staffing, and I was a business development director. And I used to explain to people that, look, 27% of 27 cents on every dollar that an employer pays you here in New York, that employer pays to the state. So so as an employer, I pay the state. You have taxes taken out of your check, so you're paying the state and the federal government, not to count when you go and purchase something here in New York, it's another 8% sales tax here in New York. So you're easily over 50%. And that they're like, huh? I'm like, look, folks, every time you hear a state go, we're going to raise the minimum wage, everyone's going to live better. That's because they don't care that the money's coming out of the entrepreneur's pocket.
Yep.
They just know that every time they do this, they get more money. Mm-hmm. They're able to create wealth for themselves
exactly
out of somebody else's. So think about that. Every time you go for a raise and your boss is like, man, I can't pay you any more than what I'm paying you. Mm-hmm. That's because your dollar an hour costs them $1.27 mm-hmm. an hour. So that's my rant on that.
Yeah. And the last thing I would add on this subject is, rather than bashing, I suppose, business owners or entrepreneurs for success, we should be asking, are they in bed with politicos? Is there a private public partnership happening here that is either making it easier for that business owner to rake in millions or billions? What's happening on the political landscape that's like making big business bigger? Because I think that's really what we're talking about here.
Right.
I think that by and large, people have respect for small business and they want to support it. But they get antsy about big business, and rightly so. But then we need to start asking more questions, ultimately.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And that kind of goes into what we're talking about here today with what you're doing. So what brought you to that point where you felt like, you know, I heard you just say your parents are entrepreneurs. So obviously you grew up in an entrepreneurial household. You understood that, like, hey, business wasn't good this month. Mm-hmm. We're not grabbing the Kellogg's box. We're grabbing the store brand box of cereal. Mm-hmm. You know, you understand those kind of things. But what was it for you that brought you to being able to say that, hey, I'm going to do these things, helping businesses out?
Mm-hmm. So yes, I grew up watching small business. I worked in small business. Most of my career has been in small business. And then I actually got my master's degree in library and information science, which sounds super weird. I did. Yeah. So my bachelor's is linguistics and English literature, and then with minors in French and Italian. So I'm fluent in French. I speak some Italian. And then I lived in France for 2 years, came back, got my master's in library information science because I was interested in systems and information and how humans interact with those things. And then I couldn't get a job immediate in that field because I didn't want to be a library director. I wanted to go work in competitive intelligence, which is essentially helping businesses use data and data mining to understand what the market looks like. How do we leverage different points of our market in order to make business decisions, essentially? So I ended up getting a job in CPG, consumer packaged goods, so food manufacturing, working for a hummus company. And while I was working there, I was there for 5 years. It was a startup. And then I worked in most areas of that business. My last position was as continuous improvement manager, where I learned about continuous improvement and change management. And I was like, whoa, small business needs this. Like, small business needs this. And most founders do not understand. They do not have access to those concepts. And those concepts change how you do business.
Six Sigma for a small business, most of us, and I'm a culprit of it. I would look at Six Sigma and be like, I can't use that. That's too big for me. And folks, if you don't know what Six Sigma is, I'll give you kind of the, and Taryn will tell me if I'm explaining this wrong. Six Sigma is basically it was invented by Motorola. It was their process. And basically the idea is you have a system that goes A, B, C, and it's a way to take B out of the equation and just go A to C and to streamline what you're doing. Some of it you'll see. If you ever wonder why your company moved a machine 6 feet over, that was probably continuous improvement, Six Sigma, to save 15 seconds of movement each time somebody did something. Did I explain it right?
Yeah, I will. Like, I think the thing I would highlight with it is that it's about finding efficiencies in the day-to-day operations so that we can recoup lost time and be able to work better, I think. And what we often see in any kind of business, whether it's a service or a product, we build waste into processes and we're not even aware that we're doing it. So like your example about the machine being moved over 6 feet, you move that machine 6 feet and okay, it's a huge undertaking. But then when you look at the waste that you have captured, that you've eliminated by doing that, it creates massive savings over time, inefficiencies on the line, and how we think and how we work.
Now for as you're working with businesses, are you approaching using that scale in the scalability side? Mm-hmm. How much of that CI, continuous improvement, do you talk to them about?
So I'm gonna drag this question over to where I want to answer it. Okay. And I will answer the question.
Drag it over.
So the first thing that I do with businesses I work with is I look at how stable is this organization? Is it being dragged to and fro because the founder or whoever is not clear on the direction and the strategy of the business? And most founders struggle with strategy because it feels big, feels nebulous, feels hard to get into. Are we doing it right? Do we need to spend 9 months creating a strategic plan that we're never going to execute? Like those kinds of things. And so when we're looking at the stability of the company, the reason we start there is because if the company isn't stable, it can't scale. You're building on a really faulty base. So our first goal is to stabilize that and then look at how are we scaling this? Are we scaling it in a way that's going to be able to continue to grow as we move and as we take on new customers, as we discover new markets? We want to build those things into the foundation of the business. And that is where continuous improvement comes into play. I am a huge fan of the Shingo model for operational excellence. If you've never heard of it, this is a public domain document.
Is that the guy who went to Japan and worked with the Japanese? Is that Shingo?
He's one of them. And so it's the Shingo Prize for operational excellence. You can apply for this. It's very short. It's very dense in ideas. And it's a fantastic resource. I take clients through it regularly, and I'm bringing it up now because it helps us see, as we're understanding the stability of the business and then how we're trying to scale, it helps us have a framework for how we might do that and where we can use continuous improvement. Because lean is one of the lean manufacturing processes. These are some of the tools within continuous improvement. And it's not a one size fits all for every business. And that's really what I set out to do with my work, is to say, okay, you've got this business. You started it because you love the concept. You want to be doing it. You want to have more time and you want to have a life, but you've become so burdened down by it that you don't have any of those things and you're starting to hate it. So how do we recoup that? How do we help you build these processes into your business so that it can keep growing and allow you to have the life that you want? Really, I just think that founders are incredible groups of people, and how do we help them have the life that they want and still serve the people who they are keeping employed in the ways that they do?
Now, what's some of the challenges though that you've run into with these founders where you're like, hey, this is what we want to do? Like, is it an acceptance of a mm-hmm. process? What do you really run into that is become like your biggest challenge when dealing with founders?
Well, I learned early on that I don't work with people who don't want to change. So if people don't want to make changes in their businesses that are going to help it run better, then I don't work with them. So I cut that out completely, because I was like, I'm not going to convince you that you need this. Either you know that this is something that's going to benefit you or you don't. So I don't go there. And then I would say with the people I do work with, probably the biggest challenge is that as we dig into the business, we look at how it's running and what's happening. It's always personal. Like, it always has elements of change required for the founder. And those things are really hard. And everyone I work with is ready to do that. And they are like, yes, this is what I want. But it still is hard. It's still scary.
Oh, there's still
things that have to, you know, be changed. And then I think as we do that, maintaining consistency with those changes, that can be really challenging, especially for founders, because a lot of the time, and this is not a general rule, but many founders would rather light a new fire and, like, you know, set something ablaze than just gently stoke the existing flames so that it can grow and it can scale and it can be stable, you know? So
I absolutely understand. That makes perfect sense to me.
Like, so I think the biggest challenge is, hey, founder, we're doing this. Don't go start more fires. Let's take care of this one and see what we're going to do here. You know,
I get it. I actually had somebody say exactly that to me with my business. I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to go do this. And he's like, you have a business. Why don't you make sure that's ramped up and good before you go over here and go do this other thing? And I'm like, yeah, I guess he's right. I have a tendency to be that guy that goes, okay, this is up and running. I should be able to hand this to somebody else. Go do it. I'm going to go do something else.
And that's the gift. That is a gift that founders have. It's a gift. But like what we have to do, and this, again, this is what I do with people, teach them, create, that's great. Hand it off. I want you to hand it off, but we can't hand off a mess. We have to clean it up first and make it something that somebody else can run. Because 99% of people, you hand them a mess and they're going to be like, and then they're going to run away and you get the mess back and it's worse. So it's on you to clean up your mess first, make it sustainable, make it repeatable, put a process in place, you know, use your team to do that and then hand it off. And that is honestly, I think that's the secret to scaling well, so that you're building onto something.
It's got to be a repeatable, sustainable process. Exactly. I definitely understand. We used to talk about that in the Marine Corps a lot. Like, I don't care how you do it, as long as foundationally it's the same, so that if I walk into another office, it's being done exactly the same way. You might say happy, I might say glad, but it's still the exact same way. But now you also, and I love, look, folks, if Taryn ever sends you an email, you'll have PPS, PPS, PPPS. You'll have more things. And I always thought it was PSS, PSS. I didn't know it was the P's go first until I got her email. But one of the things that she has that she works with, or, and I'm curious, did you create it, is the Entrepreneur's Reflection Deck. Now, what is that?
Thanks for asking. I did create it. I'm so excited I get to talk about that here. So this is a deck of 52 cards. Ta-da. It's a little glary. Sorry about the sunshine. And I created this because not everybody
have that. You could.
I know. Why don't I have the blinds? Some people don't want to work with a consultant, and that is fair, but guess what? Like I've basically taken the industry knowledge about what I've learned working for 6 years with entrepreneurs and founders. And I created this card deck of concepts because most founders, they don't want to read a whole book. They want a bite-sized piece of information that they can go do something with. So each card is a concept, and then I'll just show you one. So each card, like this one, this is symptom. So the concept is symptoms. When we're dealing with problem solving, we have symptoms and we have the root cause. We have the actual problem. So this card talks about what is a symptom. And then on the back, it's got practice points. What can you go do now to find out if you're solving for a symptom and putting a Band-Aid on it, or if you're actually solving for the root cause? So the goal really is to give people in their businesses a low barrier to entry point to work on the business, to pull themselves out of it and work on it so that they can do these things that are going to help it scale and sustain.
Is the banging on your end or my end?
I think it's on my end. I'm sorry.
I was just trying to make sure. Look, I was going to yell at my kids and be like, knock it off. I just had to make sure I wasn't yelling it into the ether or nothing. But now I love that, you know, so now the deck itself, I mean, 52 concepts like that, that really is, you know, for a lot of people, that's a hard pill to swallow to that. Cause reflection, when you're looking at those things, where did the idea all those pieces, was this by yourself? Was this because, you know, and I'm going to reference your parents, since they were entrepreneurs, did they sit with you? Like, how did you come up with the idea of it?
This literally was working with clients and finding that everyone came up against the same struggle points. And so the work that I do, I have a set process. I have ways that we get in working on the business. And I was like, I just would like to get this in people's hands. It's so accessible. It's not hard. And the thing is, like, this deck is designed for you to manage at your own pace. Like, so, and it's what I, there's 10 cards that are just inspiration. So it's 42 concepts, right? 42 concepts, 10 of them, 10 of the cards are just inspiration for days when you're just like, I hate this thing. I don't know what to do. I feel sad. I'm angry. You know, pull an inspiration card, sit with it for 5 minutes, allow yourself to get a different view of the business, and then go do something different. You know, so it's really, it's intended to be a kind, gentle tool to help people move through difficult instances in the business. Because as you know, being a founder is lonely.
Yes.
It's a lonely space. And so this has been an idea in my mind probably for several years. And then I finally was able to execute on it last year. And then I'm working on two accompanying decks right now. One is continuous improvement. So that deck will be solely continuous improvement concepts. And then the other one is change management. So that will be just change management concepts. And again, it's because sometimes sitting down and reading a book on these things can be so intimidating. And it's just like, I don't have time to sit down and finish a book right now. But I could pull a card and just interact with one piece of it.
And this is all on tbd-strategies.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They can find all that there.
Go to the shop. Order your deck. Yay.
And sooner
plus, it's fun and colorful and pretty.
They are very colorful. Now, with the deck and all these different ideas, you touched on something that I'm curious with your experience and working with founders and working with entrepreneurs and even intrapreneurs. One of the things that I know a lot of us experience, I've experienced and was able to just kind of push myself through it. That's just the way I am, but we can feel trapped within our businesses.
Yes.
How are you working with, or how do you help someone move through that trapped feeling within a business?
Thank you for speaking to this, because so many people feel this way. The first thing I do is create awareness. So what often happens with people who start businesses, they in their business are like this. We're the same person.
Right.
And the work starts with, okay, you're not the same person. Your business is a separate entity. So we create that awareness. Then it's okay. You're here. You have these values and desires and wills. You're over here. What is it that your business is different in? What is the identity of your business? So we do work around those identity pieces to say, your business exists for a specific reason. It exists to serve specific people. And like, who are those people? Who are those people that it exists to serve? You have a different reason for existing. You have different things that you get up to do every day than your business. And initially, that can be kind of hard to connect to. But as we go through that process of understanding better, okay, how am I different from my business? It allows for so much space. And that is what kind of helps people then come away from that trapped feeling. And the last thing I will say about, have you read Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner by Coleridge? Nope. Okay. This is an
epic. Say the name again. Rhyme.
The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Rhyme of the Ancient. I love when people tell me things to read. Mariner. Okay.
So this is an epic poem written by Coleridge. And it's about this sea captain who goes to sea with his crew on a ship. They see an albatross as they're leaving port, which is a good sign. It's a sign of luck and good portent. And they shoot it down. So then the rest of the story, I know, right? The rest of the story, or the poem, is about all of the terrible things that happened to them because they killed this albatross. And they've got it on the ship for the length of the poem. So the last image of the poem is the captain, and he is on this, he's stranded on this spit of land, and he's got the dead albatross wrapped around his neck. And I read that poem in eighth grade. That has stayed with me all this time. And when I was like, I need to do this with business, that was the thing.
It's a long poem too. This isn't Roses Are Red.
No, I know, right? So the point being, that picture of you've got this captain, you've got this business owner, this founder who started this thing that is a blessing. It is meant to be a blessing. It's meant to be a gift, not just to them, but also to their staff, to their family, to the customer. But it becomes this dead weight that they're so sick of carrying around. That's what I'm trying to help people with, is to like let that albatross live again. You know, let's resurrect it. Let's let it not be this heavy thing.
That is, you aren't kidding. That thing's long. I had to flip it over. Like in the 1800s, they were really bored. I'm sorry. I don't do it. Like you just got to bear with the fact that like when somebody's like, hey, I've read this thing from the 1800s and you look at it, you're like, damn, y'all had a lot of time on your hands. There was no binge watching of anything.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Have you ever read The Richest Man in Babylon?
I haven't read that yet. It's on my list. It's highly recommended.
It is highly recommended. It's a great book, but it's actually a whole bunch of pamphlets that the guy wrote and then turned it into a book.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a contemporary of Rand McNally. The guy who wrote it, he was a cartographer, so it's amazing. Like, but he wrote these stories about wealth. But you bring up a great point with the arbitrage and kind of tying that together is there's a lot of these business related wisdoms and thoughts. I think a lot of people feel like, well, I can't use that information. That was from back then.
Yeah,
it doesn't apply to me today. When I would love to hear your feelings, like. I feel that business is foundationally the same. I don't care if it's Babylon or Baltimore. Foundationally, they're the same. Yeah, they didn't have the same, you know, they're not doing distribution the way we do it and all those things, but foundationally, it's the same. Mm-hmm.
This is such a great question. And I've thought about this a lot. And part of the reason I didn't write a book is because I have zero patience for trends. And I think that especially, I mean, in really every sphere, whether it's business or self-help or whatever, there's money to be made on selling trends. We're not selling new ideas, and we're not selling well-communicated ideas necessarily. We're just selling something that's trendy. And I really think there's so much to be gained by going back to older sources, things that have been around and stood the test of time, to read how were people thinking about this then? What applies to me now? How do I take this into the space that I am in now and use this wisdom? Like, there's a reason it's still around.
Right.
And I think there's so much value in that. That really is much, much heavier, much weightier, I suppose, than just following another trend and, you know, buying whatever book or
Hill. Napoleon Hill is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. When you start grabbing Napoleon Hill books and you realize, like, that dude's still saying stuff that's still relevant today.
Yes. And
again, folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Taryn. I almost called you Taryn Hatfield. We have Taryn, Taryn Davis on. We're talking about scalable, sustainable, and I always keep doing it. Scalable, stable, sustainable businesses. And you can find all her information. You can find her deck. Everything is on tbd-strategies.com. Make sure you're liking and sharing all this. Now, we are getting pretty close to closing the bar here soon. So I'm curious what you said. You spent 2 years in France,
mm-hmm.
which is a very different. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about something at the end of this because I'm going to get your thoughts. Huh. The greatest sandwich could be, I wouldn't call it the greatest, but in my top three sandwiches ever in the world came out of France.
I believe it.
It was a sandwich, mm-hmm. but in a small town. Well, I'd call it a small town comparably. You ever been to Toulon?
I have been to Toulon.
Well, look at you. You said it even fancy. Toulon.
Toulon.
Toulon. Toulon. Listen, the kid from Baltimore says Toulon.
It's fine. Say however you like it.
You're like, too long. Look at that there. You didn't know I said that.
Do you want to start the French accents? Because I can totally go there with you.
I can totally listen to you. Have you now just do it like this and said, have you ever had a smash sandwich? I gotta ask now. I might as well just ask.
I don't think I have had a smash sandwich.
Listen to me. In Toulon, you can actually Google this. It has its own Wikipedia page.
Uh-huh.
They call them smash sandwiches.
Oh my gosh.
Good French bread.
Uh-huh.
Whatever your protein, whether it be chicken or a burger. And then they put lettuce,
mm-hmm.
this mustard that made my nose run. It was so good. Like French mustard, folks. Like
I know.
The best mustard in the U.S., and y'all know I can't stand Ohio. The best mustard in the U.S. next to Grey Poupon is Stadium mustard from Ohio. Is pretty amazing. But and now I'm on the sandwich thing. I love food. They would take this, and then they would take the French fries and put it on the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would smash it down with a flat press, like a warm flat press, not a panini press, a flat press. And I mean, we're talking the girls like locking it. And then.
Wow. That is innovative. I need to go to Toulon again. Get that.
That was also where I got to play soccer against their police department.
Nice.
And I saw my first ever French Foreign Legion recruiting office.
Super intense.
Yeah, like you walk, like it was physically when we came through the gate where our ship was ported at. When you came through the gate, if you looked to your right, it was right there.
Wow.
And we truly could have walked right. If we'd have walked in there, they'd have took us. And other than being UA from the Marine Corps, they would have took us. They'd have been like, "All right, you're French Foreign Legion now."
That was my question. Did you try to sign up?
No, God, no. I'm not that. Listen, I love being a Marine. There's something about the French Foreign Legion when they're like, we'll take felons, murderers. As long as you're not French, we're good. If you didn't know that, French Foreign Legion folks are not French. They speak French. Mm-hmm.
They speak French after being there. They don't necessarily come there speaking French.
Yeah, they don't necessarily. But they everybody there speaks French, and that's what all they're all. The only ones that are French are officers.
Makes you wonder, you know, like all the things that they're doing, you know. I haven't done a deep dive for
if
my
you
sanity.
Ever want, if you ever want, and we're going to get back to business development here in a minute, but if you ever want to take a dive and really be like, oh, look at the French Foreign Legion in French Indochina, aka Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Their techniques before the French walked away and the U.S. stepped into Vietnam, the French Foreign Legion, they were the epitome of you poke me with a stick, I'll smash you with a bat.
Wow.
Yeah, they would do things like you, like today people would be like, that's a war crime. I'm pretty sure that's a war crime. Pretty sure that's what that was.
And they're like,
I don't care.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and do this. Because they're all felons and criminals.
Right.
So I want to get into this. So I know, again, folks, if you get an email from Taryn right there in her, one of the PPPPPPSs will have a link that you can set up a consultation, and she'll go through the process to make sure that the service that she offers you is the right. But what are some of the other ways that if somebody was like, hey, I'm listening to this, she sounds like, you know, the type of person that I could work with. And listen, folks, I'm a firm believer that no different than any other sport, business is a sport. Understand that there are winners and there are losers. You need to figure out who you are. And the best winners out there have coaches. Guess how I find my coaches, folks? It's my podcast. I gather information from all these people. This way, I do it. But if you want to find out how Taryn does it, how can people find you, or what is that evaluation process going to be like for them?
The other place I'm on LinkedIn. I have stayed off of social media in terms of Instagram, Twitter, etc. on purpose.
No.
Largely just because I didn't feel that it served my business and what I was trying to do with it. It's something I reevaluate periodically, but I haven't really found a reason to go do that right now. Otherwise, so if you email or you can go to my website, poke around, and I've got, if you want to give me a little bit of context for what it is that you're doing, what you're looking for, I have a little form that you can fill out that will give you a sense of how I'm thinking in terms of what are we looking for? How do we evaluate if this is a good fit, if this is what you need even? And then I offer the free consultation largely because I really value having conversations with people about where they're at and what they need. And if this is it, and if it isn't, I will recommend things to you that I think would serve you better. So my goal really is to serve you where you are, what you're looking for, how to get there, whether I'm involved in the equation or not. So that first thing is really just like, tell me about what you're doing. Tell me what you're looking for. What is the pain point that you're really trying to find relief from?
And she also has this button, folks, on her website. It says click for a fun surprise. that if you click on it, I gotta ask, whose playlist is this?
It's my playlist.
Your playlist. Mm-hmm. I mean, she got Funky Town, she got little Celine Dion. Marvin Gaye. Listen.
I mean, the reason for that, honestly, is because I really value surprise and delight and fun. And I think if we're not having fun with what we're doing, we really need to reevaluate. That's why this card deck is so colorful. It's meant to be fun. And really, like, I want to infuse surprise and delight into everything that I'm doing with people.
I love that. I think so many of us, I think that's also why people avoid business. And there's some people out there that have great entrepreneurial ideas, even if it's an idea that they can bring to their own company. They don't want to be told no by their employer because they're not looking for that rejection. Mm-hmm. And the other side to it is they also don't want to deal with, well, I could go out and do this on my own, but everybody says, oh, it's going to take so much money. It's going to be
true.
And that's what I mean, we got a couple minutes. Why don't you speak to that? Because I think a lot of people don't know what it takes to financially to start a business.
Yeah. Business starts with an idea. It's an idea. Ideas are free. And you know what else is free? Research. So if you have your idea and then you just start asking questions and you really try to assess, does this make sense? If you do that thought work beforehand and you just try to poke holes in the idea, you're going to create a really strong idea that will eventually, if you need to go get funding, it's going to stand up. It's going to be able to hold water and people will want to fund it because it will be a solid idea. Or if you don't want to look for funding, you can look for alternative ways if you feel like you need startup capital. Not every business needs startup capital. Right. It doesn't. So what I would say is what we're really looking for is what's the smallest thing that you can start with? Do not scoff at small beginnings. Everything starts somewhere and you can't do anything with something that doesn't exist yet. So if you want to start a business, what's the idea? What are you curious about? Go research, go find out what the answers to those questions are. Do that legwork. Also pay attention to, as I find out more information, am I still curious or am I bored? Am I over it? Or is there still something that's kind of moving me forward that I'm interested in? Do I want to keep getting more information? Like, is it done, right? Solid idea is going to continue to make you curious and it's going to open up new space as you delve into it. So you don't need money to start a business. You don't need money to start thinking about a business. And I would say if that's the thing that's standing in the way is that financial piece, write out all of your concerns, put them in a parking lot, set it aside, and then go do your research. Push into what you're curious about.
See, I love that mindset and that ability to kind of say, leave the money side. I'm telling you, folks, there is money out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. If you really run into a point where, I mean, unless your idea is, hey, I've got an idea for a great car and I think I can build a better car than the big car manufacturers. Unless that's your idea, that really needs money. But if your idea is like, you know what? I've got an idea for an amazing flavor of soda. Well, you know what? Mix it up, figure it out, and you can go pretty small with it. There's things out there.
Mm-hmm. Can I respond to that?
Please.
I think one of the things that we do a huge disservice in is discounting ideas. Ideas change the world. We're living in a world today because of ideas that somebody thought up 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago. Your idea, again, like they grow, they want to grow. Find out where the idea wants to go. Don't shut it down. I just think that's so important because that creativity is so valuable.
Well, look at what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. We're on a podcast. I started listening to podcasts probably in 2012, 2013. And I think they probably started maybe a year or so before that. Mm-hmm. This is an idea that stems from public radio, from pirate radio, from cable access TV to now anybody who wants to do this, you can, folks, if you like the, if you think you're, you sound better to me, which you don't, but if you think you sound better to me, you can physically just pick your phone up, click on the podcast app and start doing a show. That's what Taryn's talking about here. Every idea has a value. Every idea, there's something. I said I was reading the Sam Walton book. That dude, if you read his book, the one thing you will learn is he said, I'm going to be a retailer, but I'm going to steal everybody else's ideas and I'm going to put them into my store.
Mm-hmm.
And that's physically, like, that's the biggest thing I took from his book was don't reinvent the wheel. Come up with one good idea and right. then grab from everybody else who has a similar idea right. and put it into yours.
And what I would say is, as you're delving into that idea, as you're finding out what you're curious about, then start asking, how does this generate or provide value? The best ideas, to your point, they're going to generate and provide value in some way. And that's how you know, is this worth continuing? Does it make me curious? Does it provide value?
I love it. Now, we're almost to the end. So we got a couple of things we need to take care of.
Right.
Now, one, I don't know where Nate's at. I'll have to get in his ass about this. But normally Nate would be here and he would pop up with this question. I'm going to go ahead and adjust his question and I'm going to make it two part. Okay. So is there a food that you now miss from being in France that you're like, I just can't get this in the States. It's just not a States thing.
From France specifically.
Yeah, it's got to be specifically.
I think what I miss the most is how they are with food. Like I miss, and this isn't really answering your question, but they have weekly markets. And we have weekly markets. It's not the same. The farmer's market is not the same as the weekly market that comes to your tiny French town. The first time I lived there, I was in a town of 5,000 people, but they still had a market come every week. And so I missed that. And then I would say I really miss probably the pastries.
I feel like they do pastries well.
They just do. And they do them properly. And then, sorry, I guess I miss a lot of things. Also, just your basic ham and cheese on a baguette with butter. Like the French are just so happy to add butter to literally everything. Yeah. And you wouldn't think, oh, this is a ham and cheese sandwich. I need to add butter to it and a lot of it. But it's so good. So those are the things I miss.
If you ever get lost in Albany, they make peanut butter and butter sandwiches on a hard roll.
Oh.
Peanut butter and butter on a hard roll. So they're all about that around here. So then that my follow-up question to that is, while you were over there, was there something from back in, I don't know if you were in Idaho when you went there or you were in Colorado, but was there a stateside mm-hmm. thing that you were like, man, I really wish I could get one of these?
Mm.
It would make a difference. Like a Jolt Cola, I don't know.
I want to say peanut butter, but I was able to source peanut butter while I was over there.
You source peanut butter?
Well, they sell it. They at the time, I think it's more everywhere now, but at the time there were certain stores that would maybe have it.
That was like a Bizarre Foods thing. Like, what's the guy who did Bizarre Foods? What the heck was his name? The bald-headed guy. The TV show Bizarre Foods.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what his name
is. I remember him doing an episode and being somewhere overseas and giving little kids peanut butter like on a spoon and then being like giving this screw face look like, what on God's green earth is this?
Yeah.
But for us, like, right,
so ubiquitous. Yeah. Like, no, Europeans think we're nuts. They're like, ew. What are you doing?
Give me a spoonful of peanut butter. I'm all over it. Like, absolutely. See, these are important things. Like, so we're learning about world travel also, folks. Well, look, folks, if you want to know what Taryn's got going on, tbd-strategies.com. Check out what she has. You can set up a consultation. Even, let her correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe you have an idea for a business and you're looking to go into that entrepreneurial space and you just need to have a conversation with somebody outside of your circle mm-hmm. that you can say, hey, I'm really thinking about this underwater basket weaving business. Mm-hmm. I think I got something here. And you need somebody to be like, look, you'd be better off being a hamster milker than doing that.
Yeah.
You know, have that conversation. Taryn is the type of person that is going to be able to break this down for you when you come and look at her website. Do you, now I know you have this on your website, any upcoming events, places where people can see you talk or anything?
If you're in the Boise area, I'm going to be doing a series of workshops on continuous improvement basics. So that's going to be through the Meridian Library.
Zoom? Are they going to be on Zoom or anything?
Those ones are not going to be on Zoom. I don't have anything online happening. Everything I'm doing is in person right now. But I do update that page regularly. And I do also tell everybody on LinkedIn about things that I'm doing. So if you go to LinkedIn and then you connect with me there, I always post what I'm doing on LinkedIn as well.
All right. So then you got to go find her on LinkedIn and then you can do all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. I love it. You know, you have so much going on. And look, folks, if you're finding us through Taryn or Taryn through us, make sure you take a moment, mm-hmm. like, share, and follow. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, X, Instagram, TikTok. We have our website, theabovethebarpodcast.com. We have our email address. Bring all that in. Reach out to us. Now, don't log off afterward. Look, finally, you want to show up there, Tom. Tom decides to show up now. See, Tom is always a little bit late.
This is pretty late.
He's like, we're closing the shop up. You missed everything. You could have been here for the food talk part of this, Tom.
Shoot.
At the end, where we learned about good French food.
Yeah.
You know, but you missed out. So maybe next time. Now, don't log off on me, Taryn. We got to talk for just a moment after the show. Oh, brother, I know exactly. We used to work together on Amtrak. He's probably just getting off of a train right now, leaving New York City. New York railroad time, leaving Penn Station that smells like hot bum piss.
Yep,
there is nothing quite like that place. The food is good, but God, the smells.
Man,
there is nothing but an assault on your nostrils. But like I keep saying, don't log off on me. But I got it before we close up here. You should know by now, after listening to all the episodes, binging everything, that the final part of every episode, the guest always gets the final word. So what's the final word tonight, Taryn?
The final word is be curious and just keep looking for those things that are inspiring to you and what you want to go do. Don't censor yourself and don't put yourself in a box. Allow yourself to expand and be curious about the things that you're really interested in, wherever you are, whether that's at work or in a business or taking a walk. Pay attention to what's happening. What are you interested in? Go do that. Think about it.
Alrighty, folks, be sure to push your stool in. This has been a Second Front podcast presentation, found on Apple, Spotify, and wherever podcasts can be found.